Blog Talk Radio.
Grind. To get what you wanna be, you know that you gotta grind. Chronology.
But guess what? Even though
this Thursday might be a little exotic right now.
That's the word.
Exotic. I got to give my major blessings. First of all, major blessings to you for tuning in to Grindology. The purpose of this show is to provide information to help people grow professionally. So I encourage you to tune in, get what you need. But then, guess what, guys? Don't stop there. Pay for it. Share with others. You know, share with others so that they can get what they need. Because this is some beneficial information, you know. So you got to bless others with it. Also, major blessings to my rock, Mr. Hunton, right here on the side, just making the environment very, very amazing.
Oh, it's like loving it now. We're good.
Not me.
And to the best media station in the world, taking the limits off TTLO with my engineer, guru, my media yoga, Reverend.
Yes, ma'am.
Did you say yoga?
You can say yoga.
I was thinking about yoga too when I said yoga.
I think you're hungry.
You
think about yoga.
I am.
Think about yoga.
Yeah, because we on this eating plan.
It's a journey.
It's a lifestyle. But I'm going to tell you this, guys. Like, overall, as you can see, like, I'm kind of like in a zen mode today. I'm like very zen right now. But before I get to that, I still got to give a shout out to my Reverend Dr. Dana King.
What up?
And also my producer out there, she's the copacetic, keep everything in line. Latanya Melton, hey Latanya. But guys, we are on this eating plan, and it's been like what, like how many weeks now, Dr. Dana?
We're about to finish three weeks on
what I would consider to be a clean eating plan, and
it's a journey.
It's a journey.
Y'all decided to go on y'all take my journey.
I was ready to get on this journey.
As I turned 50.
I was ready to get on this. I decided to take the journey with Dr. Dana. Mike decided to come on because I was taking the journey.
That's wonderful. See, that's,
you know,
that's beautiful. That's,
you know,
that's black
he just, what he really was trying to do is say, you're not going to have a hot girl summer and I'm going to be sitting around with a belly. That's what he was trying to say. He said, you're not going to be in here having a hot girl summer and I'm going to be out here with my stomach out.
Right.
Looking like the old Rick Ross. Because Rick Ross don't look like Rick Ross no more. I mean, but it's been a really good process, guys. I have to tell you, it's been an amazing, amazing process. Like, I feel good. I have a lot of energy. And when it's time for me to go to sleep, I sleep good, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one thing I noticed in this whole process. Like, I wake up, I feel energized. My stomach talks to me and tells me that it's hungry. See, now that's one of the things that you experience when you go through this whole little clean eating process. You know, your stomach starts to talk to you and start telling you what you need to do with yourself. But that, and I've been drinking a hell of a lot of water.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that normally I don't do. See, where I work, we have, like, unlimited beverages.
Oh.
Like, they have all kinds of Fanta, Sprite, Dr. Pepper, LaCroix, all kinds of water, everything. So I had to stop and walk past that. Even the Coke Zero, I had to walk past the Coke Zero.
We only got about 12 days. What's the date, 23rd?
So, hey, Pastor Angela. Yeah.
12 days. Today is 23rd. 31 days in January, right?
Yeah.
So you add 7 days to that. That's 30. We got 8 days.
I feel like I'm going to keep going.
Just one, though.
I feel like if you know, sometimes guys, like
I said that one, yeah, slide and bust it wide open.
I'm telling you, that's why, like, when I'm on a roll, I like to stay right there, because if I open one door,
mm-hmm.
one crack, have a pop or something, that's it. Have that one donut, that's it. Have that. You
but
know.
I mean, you gotta have a day of like, you know what? I ain't gotta stress about what I'm gonna eat. If I decide, and you, but you only do it, you know, and do it on a, use it for a dinner. Say, you know what, baby, we're going
right.
to dinner. And go someplace and have something good, and then the next day, you back on. You back on.
You know what?
You know.
That don't work for me. I'm going to stay off. Because if I come off.
Oh, my God.
I have my mouth on.
I'm telling you. I can imagine that, too. But it's just something. Just, you know, thank God for, you know, Dr. Dana turning 50 and he taking us on this road. I feel like I'm on the Wiz. We all easing on down the road right now. I feel like we headed to perfection. I feel like once I'm here, I'm like, what's next? You know, I feel like you start strong, you finish strong. Keep this thing going. I mean, because I feel like if I just eat one bad thing, it's going to cramp me up right there in my hip. Like right now, I was having like issues with circulation in my legs. But since this, mm-hmm. you know, these weeks, I'm like, I can do a high kick now, and I'm like, okay, let me stay right there. Let me stay in that zone. So I don't know about you guys who are out there now that you're doing your, you know, you're starting mm-hmm. your year off with like some wellness things going on. You're trying to stay in that zone. I'm telling you, keep pushing. Keep pushing. I know it's bad. You at work and people be bringing all kinds of stuff. And then it seems like the more food is being brought in at work and everywhere where you socializing, bread smells differently. You know, like, you know how you walk in, like, now when you're not eating bread and all that stuff, and then you walk in the Jewels, now the bakery sounding off.
And the bakery ain't never smelled good.
The bakery ain't never smelled good.
Now
they got a whole cake in there somewhere.
You think Gordon Ramsay like the hell kitchen?
Right.
Gordon Ramsay, Emerald Adasi, everything.
You got a whole chef back there.
The hot bar area.
Yeah, now the chicken want to be fresh at the hot bar area. That's what irritates me. Everything wants to look fresh. The chicken want to look fresh. Everything.
You know, I messed around and I did my salad the other day. And they had some Cajun tofu.
Man, that sounds good.
Not just, because I asked what the tofu tastes like. And Dr. Thomas told me this the other day. She was like, it's mushy. I can't.
It is mushy. And it just takes on the flavor of whatever it is.
No, I'm good.
You gotta be skilled. That's what I learned. I'm
you know what, though? And I don't even know if they still got this restaurant right here on 76. What was it called?
I forgot what it's called.
It was a vegan. It was a vegan soul food restaurant.
Okay.
Yeah.
On like 70. Is that 70?
How you would know?
67. I don't know, guys. Help me out, everybody that's in Chicago. Like, what is that soul food vegetarian restaurant right there? I think it's called.
It's not in there.
But anyway, like, if you ever want, like, I know when I used to go. Their soul food vegan is bananas. I'm telling you.
Wow.
You get steak, but it ain't steak. But I'm telling you. I'm sold on that. Now I don't know if they still out there. I don't know because it's been a while. It's been a while since I've been there. But yeah, it's a really good place. Look, I'm gonna say this, guys. I'm starting off strong with this eating stuff because, like I said, I want to be right.
I'm still waiting on y'all to post one dinner picture. Because, you know, rumor has it, this is what I was told, that somebody cheated.
Oh. Well,
so I'm waiting on the food pic.
First of all, I can pull out some of my old clean eating.
No, I want the old clean eating. Look it up from last year.
Penelope, I can pull out one of them old ones.
Something that was prepared. During this time.
A loaded fruit oatmeal, like,
nah.
I did it.
Nah.
But,
nah. I want
to I mean, first of all, because definitely. I'm hungry, I ain't got time to be plating like you and Pastor Harold Washington looking
that's
like
no plate.
Y'all.
One spoonful of this and a
You gotta have Pastor Hale watch it. Pastor Hale watch it be plating his stuff. It be looking all nice and neat, too cute to eat. I could tell exactly what he had. He had mango this morning with like
for his breakfast. Yeah.
It was beautiful. And it had nuts and stuff on it. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
See, we got
I can't.
They got to eat in the dark. You can't see it.
You got that stuff that we didn't slap on. They were like, have you ever, like, people be calling themselves trying to put food out on social media and you be trying to identify what the food is? Like, is that greens? No, that's steak.
I think I talk about people real bad.
I be like, what is
first
that
all,
on there?
First of all, I think it's a sin and a shame. To put paper plates on your paper plate.
Yeah, because I feel like
cut up hot dogs with a squirt.
If I see another pork chop with cheese and macaroni and corn
on the paper plate, and then even a real corn is a can. You know,
I ain't
gonna
throw shade. That's your normal meal.
Yeah, but put it on
fried pork chop.
But you can dress it up though.
With rice and corn.
And then if your pork chop don't look like it was fried right, that's a problem. It's white. It's white or it's black on the in the center of the pork chop because you'll get it with too hot.
Y'all don't be looking at all the holes from the fork that be in the middle.
Yeah.
God bless everybody that is on their eating plan, like just really shifting their lifestyle. God bless you. I'm telling you, it's a process, and I just pray everybody stick with it. And, you know, I guess we'll see. We'll see.
We will see.
That the blind man.
How your clothes fitting, though?
It's been good. Been good. I got on that scale, hunty. 10 pounds down. Got on the scale.
I was like
14. Hold on. You know how you got to get on the scale, and then you got to get on it again to make sure?
I am. That's what they tell me. You trying to be a crackhead? That's what I'm saying. You're
going to
be looking like a crackhead.
Why everybody has to always say that? Like, you lose too much weight.
That's what
they tell me.
Like, what do you lose weight for? You only got a crackhead. And they're like, oh, but your head going to be bigger than your body.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm good.
I don't even understand. But hey, it's working out.
I got energy. I've been up.
Hey, it's been working.
That's
I'm
good.
Telling you, thank God. Thank God for the good move. But also, let's talk about what we got going on every week. Like, because CTLO, we do big things all week. We kick off the week with our mission on Mondays at 7 p.m. on Taking the Limits Off with Dr. Dana King. You know, he gets our soul right in the beginning of the week. So, you know, we have to always tune in and see what he's talking about. And then on Tuesdays, guys, we got Healthy Soul Talk at 6 p.m. with my girl, my sister, Dr. Kimberly Thomas. I mean, she gets her mind right. I'm telling you guys, like, she had some amazing. This Tuesday, it was about fears and phobias.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, like, really, like, you know, how you can differentiate between what is a fear and what is a phobia. And that blessed me.
I still think she made something up, though.
You think she did?
They had a phobia for everything.
I don't know.
There is a phobia for everything.
You got fingernails.
Now,
unless you was born without them, we
talk.
I mean, but
hydrophobia, scared of water, period. Not drowning.
That's nasty.
What? I said on the air. All these things. But I was writing them down because I'm going to use them for excuse to get off work. Every week I'm going to have a new phobia.
You a mess. A whole hot mess. And then on Thursdays, of course, we got Grindology at 7 p.m. here, right here. We get your business right, make you a better professional. And then we close out our week, which is tomorrow, with a Praise Break Friday at 7 p.m. on Taking the Limits Off again with Dr. Dana King. He comes in first, and he's the last. But, I mean, he turns up. He turned up on Friday, so you got to tune in. But tune in to TTLO. If you guys need any advice or have professional questions that you would like to ask right here on Grindology, or if you're a business or a nonprofit that have an event or like to promote your brand right here on TTLO, please feel free to message us on the Grindo or TTLO inbox on Facebook or email us at Taking the Limits Off at Comcast.net, taking the limit off at Comcast.net, or call into the show, call into the station, 323-870-4375. Love to hear your voice. We love to hear your voice. But before we go to our first break, let's talk about the major grind of the week.
Uh-oh.
Now, see, this is one of the parts of the show where we just basically discuss, you know, a major grind that occurred in the professional world this week. And the one I'm talking about today actually happened in my professional world, which was really good. But shout out to Cara Chicago. Cara Chicago is a nonprofit organization that is driven to assist individuals with finding jobs. Not only that, they are a social enterprise organization where they have like Cara Chicago, which is actually the nonprofit sector, and then they have two revenue generating entities. One of them, which is Clean Slate, and the other one is Cara Connect. I mean, it is amazing, guys, to be in connection with organizations. I was just blessed to get to know them this week and know what their mission and what their purpose is. They have helped thousands and thousands of individuals in the Chicagoland area, like, not just get jobs, but, like, all the resources that they need. Say, for instance, if there's an individual who is who's homeless, they help them in terms of providing and connecting them with their network that helps them get a place to stay, helps them get a clothes to wear, and a way of transportation back and forth to the training and to the job. Like, that's one thing that really stood out for me that I really found to be, like, such, how can I say, heartwarming, to know that you have organizations out there like Cara Chicago. So, like, I got to look at, like, a video of, like, there were people, individuals who were, like, you know, had substance abuse, some who were involved in domestic violence, and, you know, and they had to get back on their feet. It's like people from all walks of life, people who have all, you know, encountered a particular hardship in their lives, and they were able to connect them. Now, here's one thing that I love about, like, that whole process, right? So many times as a nonprofit, we have services that put Band-Aids on individual situations. You know, like, it's one thing, and not to knock anyone who will go out and you know, and go into the ViDoc and give a homeless person a sandwich. You know, God bless those individuals because that's what they have and that's what they give, what they have, right? But there is something when you can connect with an individual or a nonprofit that wants to see you succeed and give you all the elements necessary, all the resources necessary to help you to succeed, right? Because you can say, I'm going to give you a job, right? But if that person doesn't have no home, how can they be able to effectively get to a job? You know, they're too busy worrying about a specific issue in order to, you know, instead of focusing on working, they're focusing on that issue. If I'm homeless, how can I get to work? Why am I thinking about work when I don't have a place to stay? You know, I don't have adequate clothing to go to a job, you know, or I'm you know, suffering from a particular substance or mental health, you know, situation, and I can't even get my mindset to get a job, you know. So it's like, it's one thing to feed a person a sandwich, but there's another thing when you are the resource that brings that whole thing together. I'm going to feed you, I'm going to clothe you, I'm going to house you, and I'm going to give you the training necessary to be able to work. That is life-changing, you know. And it also, for me, my takeaway from that, real talk, guys, is that it's important to have a network. You know, if you have one, if you provide one service, it is so important to have a network of individuals that can come together and be able to provide the holistic services, all the services that's needed. You have to think ahead. You know, you can feel good at the end of the day going to bring an individual a sandwich because you know that they ate for that moment. I mean, I don't know how long a sandwich lasts for me, but, you know, you can go and do that, right? 2 seconds. I'm engulfed in that, and then
right,
I might be
right
hungry
now,
another
right
day.
Right now,
it's
about 2 seconds.
Right, right. But when you can think ahead of that and say, okay, not only do I want to feed this person, but I want to get this person off the street. You know, I want to get this person somewhere where they can be able to, you know, have the ability to be the best at who they are. A whole nother different process, guys, a whole nother different process. But definitely shout out to Cara Chicago, one of the nonprofits. I mean, they generate over $10 million in revenue from their nonprofit, from their social enterprise sector, and from their giving and grant funding to be able to support others, you know. And I'm like, you know, this big blessings to them. You know, I just really feel like they deserve the major grind of the week because it's a passion to want to serve. You know, everybody say that they want to, but there's enough, there's a whole total different, you know, outlook on it when you really have to get down into the bare bones of starting a nonprofit or doing anything related or revolved around a nonprofit. So definitely, so definitely. I don't know, because that was weird. It was like some thunder, and I know it's snow out, but it was like, it wasn't like quiet storm. It was like the quiet storm, thunder.
Some sexy real quick.
Quiet storm. Yeah.
It's over here.
Oh my God, that was probably somebody's thunder.
That was
that's
my
your
thunder.
Thunder.
That was my thunder.
Are you serious?
I was playing. I don't know what that was.
Cause I would have believed that too, because it was like a rumble.
He
did, see? I'm
no, we know who had that problem.
What do you mean?
But real talk, guys. Grind of the Week, Cara Foundation. If you ever want to look them up, please just look up Cara, C-A-R-A, Chicago. Google it. Cara Chicago, and I believe it's cara.org, but please don't, you know, trust that I'm saying the right thing. Just go in and Google Cara, C-A-R-A, Chicago, and just get to, you know them. If you want to donate to them, if you want to sew into them, if you want to volunteer, that's one organization that, like, really stuck out to me. I mean, and their message, you know, it's something when a nonprofit can tell a story. And that story really touch you, touch your heart, really, you know, provokes you to want to do more. And that's what we want to do this year, guys. Just do more and do better for not just ourselves, but for others. So that's my takeaway from the major grind of this week. And we're going to take a quick break, our first break, and then we're going to get back and discuss our topic today. That's what our topic is, guys. Starting or supporting a nonprofit, which one is best? I mean, just listening to my story around the Cara, just really provokes you to go on. You know, what is the best thing to do? You want to give, right? You want to make an impact to the community. And you want to make it the best way and the more efficient way that you know how. So, should you start a nonprofit organization and get it off the ground? Or should you support an existing nonprofit that's out here right now doing good things? We're going to discuss the same way this thing out real quick right here on Grindology. Get your big cap on. We'll be right back. Common and Tiffany Haddish. Community and the world, it triggers us to take action, right? It just calls us to want to do something about it, right? There's a mission out here. We our hearts are calling to serve another that's in need, and you know we want to take action. We want to make that happen. But here's the thing: what is the right action? You know what should we do? You know, should we start a nonprofit? Or should we support one that's existing? You know, should we find other ways to bring our time, our talent, our energy, our money, you know, everything into starting? Or should we take everything that we currently have and put it in something that's already thriving? That's important. That's important. But before we get to the real good part, let's talk about some of the facts, right? Some of the facts. Nonprofits are organizations, right? They're designed to mobilize a community around a specific cause, right? And also, it's created to make an impact, right? And deliver services to those in need. That's really the whole purpose of a nonprofit, right? They identify as nonprofit because all that you earn, everything that you raise, everything that you generate, is given and going towards a specific cause. That's just basically it. This is what we know, right? It's not for us to make money. It's not for us to make profit. It's not for us to be a millionaire, trillionaire. It's for us to bring revenue in to serve our communities, right? So guess what? There are 1.9 million nonprofits in the United States. I'm going to say that again. There's 1.9 million nonprofits in the United States, and it's approximately 115,000 nonprofits in Illinois. 52,000 of those are in Cook County. 52,000 nonprofits in Cook County. That's half of the state.
That's so That's encompassing all nonprofits.
All nonprofits.
And
churches.
52,000.
In Cook County.
That's because of the churches. I would be shocked if half of those wasn't churches.
That would be interesting. Like, I have to take a look at that to see how many of those are actually churches, right? But 115,000 nonprofits in Illinois, 52,000 in Cook County. With us,
in Chicago, we don't know.
No, it's not. Yeah, it's not indicated.
52,000 in Cook County.
I would say a greater portion of that is in the city.
Yeah, and once you get to the city, then most in church.
Yeah, yeah.
If they got their 501, yeah.
The 501c3, if they have identified as a 501c3. Yeah, definitely, darling. Wow. Like, that's a lot when you think about it.
It really is.
But guess what? 52,000 in Cook County generating a revenue of $114 billion. 52,000 nonprofits in Cook County generating $114 billion in revenue.
Yeah, because it's straight revenue because it's tax-free.
Yeah, tax-free. Now, here's the thing, guys. Like, when we think about $114 billion, we're like, dang, that's a lot, you know. But we also got to think about that some of these organizations, the ones that's generating, like, within the $300,000, some that's generating $1 million or more, you know, they have a lot going on. Payroll eats up a lot of revenue. Paying people to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
Paying your CEOs and your COOs and your CFOs and all the other O's out there. Yeah, that impacts. That really hits your bottom line right there. Really do. But $114 billion, nevertheless, that's a lot of money. And most nonprofits, this is a fact, guys. Most nonprofits struggle due to lack of planning.
Mm.
Now, the crazy thing is they say 1 out of 5 of the largest nonprofits operate without a plan.
Churches.
One out of five of the largest nonprofits operate all willy-nilly without a plan. I mean, that is something to really, really, like, engage. But most of the nonprofits struggle due to lack of planning. So here's some of the things that we have to consider with this thing, right? Leadership transition plans are a must. One of the issues that we have as a nonprofit, as nonprofit organizations, is that sometimes when an individual start one, they think that they're going to end with it. Like, they're going to ride this thing all the way out, you know. And in actuality, a nonprofit organization is supposed to, you know, thrive even when you're gone. So, you know, how do you do that? How do you do that? Leadership transition plan. You must have one. This is not just in churches, but definitely in churches. I've seen a lot of churches close the door because the leader is gone. Years of staying grounded as that pastor held and preached all the way to the end, but no leadership transition plan. It's important. It's important. Nonprofit organizations, in order to keep a non-for-profit thriving, you have to have a leadership transition plan. For everybody who doesn't really know what that is, that's just making sure that you have a succession plan, a plan that transitions your leaders so that the organization can keep moving and keep thriving. And I always think that it's important to do that, right? Another thing is strategic plans are the foundation for how a non-for-profit operates. You got to have a strategic plan. Like, this is what they say. People perish for the lack of planning.
Mm-hmm.
Non-for-profits perish due to the lack of planning, I'm telling you. But having a strategic plan is key to how a non-for-profit operates. Now, a lot of people, I think one of the reasons behind me communicating this particular part of it is for individuals who are thinking about starting a non-for-profit. They have to think about these particular things. Like, you can have a non-for-profit, but if you don't know how you're going to plan it so that it can grow,
mm-hmm.
and that it can pass on, and that you can leave it there and keep going, then it's something to consider. It's not one of those things that you should be able to hold on to. It's something that should grow way beyond your ability to hold it. I'm telling you, it's real. Another smart fact about non-for-profits, right, is millennials
mm-hmm.
represent more than half of the consumer population and growing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why did I say that? Because millennials are the individuals that are going to be working these nonprofits, and they're going to be your donors. So when you're starting or even considering starting a non-for-profit, how you engage the millennials? Because they're 50% of the consumers out here. The baby boomers are, you know, they're sitting on down, you know, and more the millennials are coming on up,
mm-hmm.
you know, 50% of the consumer population and growing. So it's important for us to connect with the millennials as it relates to starting a nonprofit or thinking about starting a nonprofit. But here's one thing that I love that I actually read, right? If you show any sign of waste or inefficiency
mm-hmm.
in a millennial, they will cut you off quick, and it's going to be hard for you to get back into their good graces. Like, millennials don't like waste.
None.
They don't like waste. Now, it's so funny because they're so conscious, right, about making sure that their money is being used. They don't want to waste the planet. They don't want to, you know, they want energy. They don't want to waste energy, the efficiency. Like, they're constantly on the go. So if you're a non-for-profit and you show any signs of waste or any signs of inefficient processes, you done cut the millennial off. That's 50% of your giving right there in the door for, you know, in terms of millennials.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is lack of vision and efficient operations impact millennials as employees and donors. Millennials don't like to work for a company that shows lack of vision or efficiency.
Mm.
Now, that's crazy because, like, we always say, oh, the millennials, they're entitled, you know, they think that, you know, but they the ones that they'll cut you off. If you look like you have stepping, they will cut you off in a heartbeat. And now, and in terms of donors, being 50% of your projected donors for your non-for-profit, guys, all I can say is when you decide to start a non-for-profit, you have to. It's a must. Identify your plans and also identify how you're going to market. See, you still have to tell the story at the end of the day, right? You still have to be able to communicate and be transparent. One of the things that I love about, you know, when I get to work with certain nonprofits, I look at, like, how transparent are they?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how good are they actually telling their story to the donor? Because for me, it's just like when you're looking at a commercial and you see something good, like a food item that's good. That particular business told a story so well that it allowed me to say, you know what, I'm going to go on out here and I'm going to buy me a chicken sandwich. You know? But...
Why should you keep going back to food?
I know. It's the clean eating process. I'm going to keep talking about food. I'm sorry. But it draws you. It's the marketing. The same thing with a non-for-profit. If you don't tell the story, then you can't pull in the donors. And that's one of the things you have to consider when you think about this whole thing. There is work when it comes to starting a non-profit. There are processes. It takes time. It takes energy. And when you're thinking about making that move, like, oh, okay, I want to change the world. I want to make this huge impact to my community. I want to shift, you know, the my city to move forward to help those in need, is it calling you to actually start a nonprofit?
Hmm.
You know, do you have the money? Do you have the time? Do you have the energy? These are the questions that we definitely want to ask. These are the things that we want to look into because, I mean, it takes work. Planning and marketing, absolutely, Darlene. That is very important. You have to tell the story and the transparency. When I'm a donor, right, and I'm the one giving money to a non-for-profit, if I can go onto your site and I can see your 990s, I can go in and I can see your profit and loss statements, I can go in and see where you're actually moving money, how much is spent on salaries, how much is actually spent on the actual program, it opens up the door to a lot of transparency for that organization, but a lot of trust for the donor. A donor wants to be able to trust you. You know, a donor wants to be able to see what's going on. That's just it. If you're behind the scenes and I'm giving you all my money, and next thing you know, I go to the program, or I'm bringing resources to the program, or, you know, my funds or my time to the program, and even the people that I'm referring you to this program, and they go in there and they say they couldn't help me. Wait a minute, it's a $10 million organization. But they said they didn't have, you know, they didn't have this and they didn't have that. And when I went in there, they didn't. I'm like, okay, so where's my money going?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think that's what really causes individuals to want to start their own nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because they lack a certain level of trust with the organizations that are already in play. When you're looking at wanting to donate to, like, places like the Salvation Army or, you know, Goodwill or the Susan G. Komen Foundation or any of the real growing, real successful non-for-profits, you look at it like, oh, they don't need my little money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they making millions.
Right.
You know, Salvation Army been in play for a long time. They don't need my $20 a month. You know, and then you focus on, you know what, then let me put it somewhere, you know. Our churches are non-for-profit, you know. And I feel like not only are our churches non-for-profits that help us spiritually, right,
mm-hmm.
but they're also supposed to be like a catalyst to the community, right? So then if I'm coming in and as a member of my church,
mm-hmm.
I'm bringing my tithes and my offerings into the church with the understanding that the church is doing what they need to do in the community, being that resource, you know? And then you really ask that question, and I think this is a really good question since I got a man of the cloth in here. Like, is that one of the major like purposes of a church or a ministry, that if me as an individual, if I'm bringing tithes and offering into the church, should I expect that those particular funds be used to impact the community?
No, because unless there is a specific ministry set up in the church, like for instance, if it's outreach,
mm-hmm.
then yes. If your church has an outreach ministry, then yeah, you can kind of say, hey, yeah, those funds, I want to give some extra money to not tithes and offering.
Mm-hmm.
I want to give something to, you know, if I pay my tithes, I'm gonna give my offering to this outreach ministry because I know they do a lot of work. Like they're the ones who go underneath the viaduct and pass out sandwiches. And
mm-hmm.
socks and gloves and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Then yeah, absolutely. But not your, you know, once you turn it over, you don't get to dictate where it goes. But you can always ask, because the question that people, I think every church should ask is, what does our outreach ministry do? And please don't tell me about foreign missions when we got folks that's starving over here.
That's rich. That's real
that's,
rich.
That's always been a huge deal for me, because I've seen guys come to my church. And when I'm coming over here next week, we going to Africa to take some sewing machines. And I think it's a wonderful deal. One of my buddies, Cliff Williams, he takes they go there and they buy sewing machines because that's how people make money. So they're going to deliver two or three sewing machines to people, and that's new money they're going to get. My problem is when you are local and you know, you can't go past Canal Port, underneath the Canal Port Bridge, and you see all those people under there, and it's like, what are we doing for those people? Why am I sending money 3,000 miles away when I can get money four blocks away?
Yeah, definitely.
So you have to be real careful of that. And then to the overhead, you mentioned all the payroll.
Yes.
And all that. That's why places like Salvation, people work at the Salvation Army.
Yeah.
Right? So they got CEOs, they got marketing people, all those people getting paid.
They're getting paid.
Those are not
corporations.
It's a non for profit, but it's a corporation.
It's a corporation.
And all those people gotta get paid. So if you're saying I'm gonna give $1,000 to such and such, okay, by the time it gets to it, we found all this out during Katrina.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
During Katrina. And then for Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
We found this out. That's why they were like, give the money to these organizations because they ain't got all that over here.
Yeah.
They can take the money directly there. Because if I give $1,000 to Salvation Army, and I think there's a website, I'll look it up while you're going to you bring in that topic. I'll be there at a website that told you if you gave $1,000 to Salvation Army, by the time that trickled down from everybody else, where you were sending money to, got
200. Yeah. And can you imagine that? Like, that's why a lot of times in terms of grant funding, too, they want to know how much are you putting in terms of administrative, you know, and how much is being put in terms of the actual programming.
Right.
Because you can drain almost 50% of your revenue just in paying people alone, you know, and that's one of the things where when you're looking at it, like, okay, I'd rather put my $1,000 in an organization that I know that's going to take that $1,000. Or, a matter of fact, let me start my own nonprofit. Because then I can know that, you know, my money's coming and I'm going to be using every dime that I have to help that individual or that group or that cause that I'm supporting. And I trust me, you know. I trust that my money is going to go where it needs to go when I'm managing it, and that's what triggers a lot of people to start a nonprofit organization.
Let me correct myself. So I just looked this up real quick. I want to make sure I don't get no trouble with nobody. Salvation Army says 82 cents of every dollar goes towards their certain program services. It says the average charity spends 75% of their budget on programs. While the remaining cost goes to cover overhead, like fundraising and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it depends on what you're doing. According to this, it says Red Cross, this is numbers are from 2017, Red Cross gives 91 cents of every dollar.
Wow.
Goes to their efforts.
See, that's good.
Yeah.
But see, they also know how to leverage that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if 91%, if you're a multi-million-dollar non-for-profit, 10% of that multi-million could be payroll or, you know, administrative or whatever, but they know how to be able to manage it, and that's one of the things that I love, like, when you grow to that point. But, yeah, it's a process. So Darlene says, okay, so I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
As that was my point today, the men, women on the street corners asking for money, is that a church issue or government? Wow, that's a good question, Darlene. That's a very, very good question. So, like, the men or women on the street corners asking for money, is that a church issue or a government issue? I feel like I want to say, this, and this is my viewpoint, right? It's a little bit speckled around, right? The individual, and then the resources that individual has available to them. Now, whatever that resource is, whether it be the church, who is supposed to be the pillar of the community, you know, they see it, and the church gives because they're supposed to, you know, it's not even like a supposed to thing, because I don't want to say that they're obligated, but more so they're planted to be able to be a resource. Mm-hmm. I mean, I look at it like that. Even though we might not identify the tithe as being part of that resource mm-hmm. as much as it is keeping that church planted in the community, but you're still a resource,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then the government, they are a form of resource as well. So, like, I feel like it's a bit of both, Darlene. Like, now, the homeless vet.
That's government. No.
That's
no,
all government.
No honorably.
That's all government.
No honorably discharged veteran. You know what I'm saying? That no honorably discharged veteran should be homeless.
Now, see, and that is the weirdest thing for me. Disabled anything, Darlene. That is the weirdest thing for me to see a government that we have millions and millions and trillions and billions of dollars, right? And we don't have the resources to be able to provide adequate health care and resources for our veterans. That right there, that's something concerning, right? But then it's a mixture of so many things, right? I look at certain people who are out here and they're homeless or something, and you say, why? You know, is it like, you know, for me, is it a personal decision? You know, some people just don't, you know, is it a mental, you know, issue?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you don't know what it is that makes that individual not have the ability to thrive within their own. Now, I know some people are actually, you know, are out on the streets because they can't do any better, but they want to.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's some that are out there because they don't know how to adequately, you know, take care of themselves.
So I got curious. So I pulled up the highest, I was looking for the who gets the most, uses the most money from their the CEOs,
mm-hmm.
right? And I'm just going to give you the top three just for time's sake. The third highest salary for CEOs is that in 2008. Mm-hmm. Donald Johnson Evans from the Evans Scholars Foundation. He makes $2 million a year.
Wow.
I
wonder what their revenue is. I'm going to tell you guys, I am a 990 stalker.
Wait.
Like, when people tell me that they're a non-profit organization, the first thing I do is look at their 990.
Glenn B. Lowry from the Museum of Modern Art makes $2.4 million a year.
Because that art is pricey.
And then the highest CEO for non-profit is the New York Philharmonic. Which is, he makes $2.6 million.
Woo!
Yeah. But the compensation for the person that's in charge of United Way, which is the seventh highest salary, is Brian Gallagher, makes $982,000 a year.
You know what?
As of 2008.
They're millionaires.
He's making millions now.
Non-for-profit millionaires out there, but CEOs of non-for-profits that are millionaires. Now, let me tell you something. When you hear those names, like the Philharmonic, that's long money.
Mm-hmm.
That's slave. That's long generational slave.
Old people,
master plantation type money. Like you can tell. Like, okay, yeah, that's an organization that has had money since money was printed. That's you know, when you look at it like
old,
that.
They call it old money.
Yeah,
they still got the old.
They still got old money.
What's those dollars?
The Museum of Modern Art. When you think about that,
yeah.
Look at all the, like, they are the ones that are really, they have like all the old ancient art.
And that's
not to
say they don't have hard jobs, right? We're not taking away
not
the fact
at
they have
all.
Hard jobs, but you think, and again, I don't really care about those non-for-profits because they're not doing anything for poor people. I was looking at this more to find out the ones who were working with poor people, because that's what I was trying to skip around to see who was who.
And one of the things I love is that, like I said, I when I look at 990s guys, I look at what the revenue is, I look at what they're paying out their in salaries, and then I also look at what they're paying their executives, you know, because here's the thing. If you're say, for instance, a $1 million nonprofit organization, and your CEO is receiving $400,000. That's all I'm gonna say.
Right.
You know, if you're a $10 million organization and your CEO is getting $5 million of that, that's something that you have to think about. Like, they only put half of that. But that's what, as donors, and this is one of the things, guys, that, you know, as we're talking about this, getting back to the understanding, should I start a non-for-profit or should I actually
support
one? A real good non-for-profit, a real thriving one, a real transparent one, are going to have those 990s sitting out there to let you know, I have nothing to hide. This is what I pay. This is what I pay my people. This is what I pay the CEO. This is how we run it. This is what we're bringing in. And this is how, you know, this is how your money will be impacted. You take that, you take a look at it, and you make the decision, you know, whether or not you want to support it. Here's the thing. Sometimes we have the heart to want to support the small non-for-profit, you know, and that's well understood, because some of them are really, you know, just like Dana said, really focus on putting more money into the program than they are into the overhead and the operations aspect of it. So it is so important. Look at grant space. I don't know if anybody out there who are really tied into, you know, high into non-for-profits, look at grant space. Grantspace.org will allow you to pull up any non-for-profit, and if there are ones that are, you know, out there, you can be able to pull up their 990s right there on Grantspace, right there.
Yep.
So, like, that's just one of the things that you need to consider when we're talking about this whole thing. Should I start one or should I support one? Which one is best? We're weighing out these options here. We're trying to give you the look at here. On one hand, you might have to, you know, put some work in it. You're going to have to get three good people that support your vision and get you started and get you out there. And then on the other hand, you got like, man, I got money. I just need a tax deduction. I want to, you know, make an impact to my bottom line. Then maybe I should just take that and sow into an organization. You know, for me, sometimes that is less of a headache. But then, yeah, just like anybody is giving anybody any type of money, they want to know where it's going and how it's being handled. So let's weigh this out. We're gonna take our next break, and then we're gonna come back and we're gonna talk about the questions. What are the questions that we need to have to help make this decision process, or whether I should just take the money that I have and start a non-for-profit, or should I just take the money that I have and the resources and the knowledge and the understanding that I have and support a non-profit, volunteer for a non-profit, put my money into it, or should I just collaborate with someone who needs it? It's a lot of things to consider, guys, so we're going to ask the right questions. We're going to make sure that we know exactly what we should be doing right here. Thank you. We are back. Welcome to Grindology once again. We are studying all things professional, but today we are talking about starting versus supporting a non-for-profit. Which one is best? And like so far, guys, we've had like a lot of helpful information as it relates to this, that we know that, you know, overall, you know, you have to have a plan. If you're interested or ever interested in starting a non-for-profit, we don't knock it, but one of the things that I have had a conversation with some of the real, like, higher level non-for-profit, you know, subject matter experts, the experts in it, the gurus of it, they say it just as plainly that, you know, non-for-profits are saturated in our communities, like, saturated. So that means that it is like, you know, we have more non-for-profits than we have for-profits that govern our communities. And that was very interesting to me. Like, we were just having a conversation about, like, you know, like certain organizations that are called to support our community. What are they doing? Where are they going? And, you know, as an individual who wants to support a non-for-profit, it's always important to do your research. Research the organizations. Mm-hmm. Research how much, you know, they're paying their executives. You get to see that when you have an organization that's transparent. And sometimes, you know, as people, a lot of reasons why we start non-for-profits is because, yeah, in our hearts, we want to make an impact. We want to help others. But then also, we want to be able to see where our money's going. You know, sometimes when we tend to give money or, you know, sow into organizations, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes we can't dictate what it is when it's out of our pockets, you know. But when you see a person being fed or a person, you know, getting off the streets and into their mm-hmm. own and becoming independent, all driven by a specific organization, that's where, you know, that's where you gain more trust. And then you get to that point of saying, yeah, I want to put more of my money into that because, you know, I do see that because the organization paints a picture. They tell the story. They're transparent in where their money going. And then at the same time, they let you know, hey, you can bring what little you have or what much you have and put it into here and watch that happen. That's one of the important things also when it comes to having or even being interested in starting a non-for-profit. When you have programs or services, you got to have measurable outcomes.
Yeah.
You know, you got to have, like, a way to be able to measure the success of your non-for-profit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of non-for-profits, they go out willy-nilly. Hey, we're going to give sandwiches. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. You just try to bring a bundle of services in with no goal and no way to measure it. If you just look at it, for me being a donor or me, you know, asking a donor for money, would it be better for me to say, guess what, if you give me some money, I'll go feed some people and you know, it's going to be people going to get fed.
Right.
Or as a donor, and I'm asking for money. I mean, and I'm a non-for-profit. I'm asking for money, and I'm looking at you, and I'm telling you, last year, we fed 300 people.
Mm-hmm.
we had $3,000. We fed 300 people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you donate, you will help us succeed in reaching our goal of feeding 400 people.
Yep.
Would you be more susceptible of giving me money at that particular time? Would you say, yeah, you
right.
know, because she got facts behind it.
Right.
And that was one of the things I learned yesterday, which was really good, you know, going back into my grind of the week, the Carl Foundation, right? Data does not tell the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
But data makes the donor trust the story.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have data. But that's one of the things you have to consider if you're interested in starting a non-for-profit. But if you're interested in supporting one, you got to see the data.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier for me to trust the organization that I see that's telling me that they feed the, once again, going back to transparency, which is key,
mm-hmm.
that feeds these many type of people or this did and show me this through their transparency, through their 990s, through every little action that they're doing and just put it all out on the table. I'm like, yeah, I might go ahead and, you know, give you $2, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I feel comfortable that it's being done because everywhere I go, I'm seeing a person off the street or a family being fed or a mom getting a job or
right.
something as a result of me putting my impact
mm-hmm.
in it. So that is one of the things. But then let's talk about it. Let's ask the questions, right? These are the things, guys, that you will need to just ask yourself as we're going through, like, as you're going through that decision. Like, do I want to start a non-for-profit or do I just want to support it? One of them is, what is your why? Right? Why do you want to start a non-for-profit?
Your why. Got it.
What is your why? You know, why do you want to do it? You know, do you want to do it so that you can, you know, flex, like, I got my own non-for-profit organization that's out here, you know, we're doing big things, or are you doing it because you really want to help? You know, so if you really want to help, you really want to make that impact in the community, this is the reason why I'm starting it. There's one organization that really blessed me. They're in Maywood. And shout out to Pastor Tracy Lee. She
mm-hmm.
has the Warming Center
mm-hmm.
in Maywood. I had just did a where is it?
Hospice. No, stop that. So yeah.
And I had the I was blessed to get to talk to her on One Sister to Another, and she was talking about the Warming Center and how, you know, she brings people, you know, individuals, you know, out
mm-hmm.
from the streets. And, you know, into a place that's warm and feed and, you know, and give haircuts and
mm-hmm.
all kinds of resources and stuff. And, like, that's what I love. Like, you know, technically, is she, you know, at the $1 million? No, but is she taking what she has and being a blessing?
Mm-hmm.
That's enough to make you, you know, you see what an individual is doing. You know, and that's another thing that I always, you know, try to, you know, encourage individuals who are trying to start non-for-profits. Like, do something already before you start
yeah.
launching off into the deep.
Yes.
You know, if you have $500, start something with that $500 before you start going into being a full-fledged non-for-profit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do things to generate and allow your actions to pull people in. Because those are the questions that you want to ask. What? Why? Why am I doing it, right? But here's another question. Is there a need? Is there a need
mm-hmm.
for the non-for-profit that you're looking to start? You know, because if you don't see the need and you're just doing it because it's deep inside, you'll feel good, then I don't think that that's going to be kind of like the most effective way to start a non-for-profit that you don't, you haven't done the research to determine that there's a need where you're trying to serve it. But if you're supporting one, ask the question, is there anyone currently supporting that need?
Mm-hmm.
So is there a need for another food pantry? Or mm-hmm. is there someone out there that already has a food pantry that, you know, you can support, help support their needs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're already there. They're already planning. Their people already know them. You know, so.
Right. Why try to build another one?
Absolutely.
And you can support that one.
Why try to build another one? You know, when I first started like this whole process of consulting non-for-profits,
mm-hmm.
I used to always do a lot of research, and one of the questions that they used to always ask is, why do you want to start a non-for-profit, and is there another non-for-profit that's already established that you can support? And I'm like, why would you push me over there when I got my own dream?
Yeah, at my old church, before we got our food pantry, Latanya and I had looked into starting a food pantry. So we went and got all the information, got all the documentation, everything. And we were actually talking about a soup kitchen, not even a food pantry. But what we found out was, it was like, we were surrounded by food pantries and soup kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah, we were surrounded by
them
over at the old church. They were everywhere. So we were like, that's not a good idea. Now,
it's not effective.
Now, food pantries, because the way food pantries are set up, you know, what it is now is that it's unfortunate, but people play the game. So, you know, you can't go to the food pantry every week.
No.
It's every other week. You have to, like, sign up and then they take your driver's license or your ID and they put it in the system, and then you can't come back the following week. You need to come back the week after that. But what happens is you play the game.
Right. You go to that
food pantry.
Yeah.
So you get all the food pantries, man. By the time Friday comes, you're good.
Yeah. And I feel like that, but it's supporting a need, and not
there
only that, they
need.
Have a resource
that
is covering from one week to the next. So I might go to, you know, Mount Sinai today and grab a bag.
Right.
But then I know in about 3 days I'm not going to have any more food. So then I'm going to go to the food pantry 3 blocks up, you know, because they give food on Wednesday. So it's like, it's one of those things that, is there a need?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I add one more food pantry, is that going to help? Or is that going to spark out the resources that are currently within that community?
Because those food pantries are getting their food from the same place.
From the same place.
So now, if my
food pantry
up the street is used to being able to serve 50 people, but now you've been to open up one. Now I can only sell 30 of my 50.
Yeah.
Right, because my level 20 is going to be short.
It's going to be short.
Right? Or can I say, go down to the other church up the street and then that I want to come, I just want to come help serve.
Yeah.
Or I can help you update your database.
Yeah.
Or I can make your service more efficient.
Yeah.
So if you can serve 50, I think we can help serve 100.
Yeah. Or I can find we can be able to add. Because here's the thing, and this is one of the things that I would love, right, to see.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, okay, we have a food pantry, not just talking about that particular form of service, right? But say, for instance, we have a food pantry.
Right.
I have the knowledge and the understanding and additional resources to start my own food pantry. But, you know, I did want to add a soup kitchen, or I did want to teach nutrition, or I did want to, you know, do like a food delivery for elderly who can't get out to the food pantry. Or, you know, I want to be able to now take my current skill set and my resources and combine it with someone that's already existing to help that one grow, to impact more people, and to be able to bring a more innovative way of just doing a food pantry. It's a difference. So, question again. Is there a need for you to start this non-for-profit in your organization, or is there an organization that's already established that, you know, supports the need that you're trying to support?
That's your why.
That's your why.
Right, got it.
It's important. The next one is, do you have a team that supports your purpose? If you're going to start a non-for-profit, do you have a team that supports your purpose? Now, here's the thing, you know, and I am a woman of faith, right? So I know, like, if you build it, they will come. You know, if you walk it, if you, you know, you take one step, God will take two. I know all those things, right, that say, you know, all I got to do is start it and everything is going to come. That's true. That's one part of the process, right? You can start it and let people and watch everything open up. But also, it's important to know that if I already had, like, say, for instance, I took my $500 and now I'm out here serving, And now I got other people that's out here passing out sandwiches with me.
Mm-hmm.
Now I got a team before I even started a non-for-profit. Now I'm seeing, you know, fruit being birthed from just that little seed. Then maybe it does cause for you to start a non-for-profit.
You think the problem is people don't start doing the actual work until they wait until they go and do the whole final. They start trying to get the paperwork before they actually have
I see it all the time.
The substance.
I see it all the time.
I'm a 501c3, but I ain't doing nothing yet.
I see it all the time.
Yeah.
And I see, like, you know, a lot of individuals who, you know, I have worked with who, you know, wanted to start 501c3s or non-for-profit organizations. I always when I do the initial consultation, I ask them what programs do you currently have started?
Mm-hmm.
What are you currently doing now that's supporting this non-for-profit that you're trying to establish? You know, because I feel like it should already be in play. You know, I feel like it should be already there in your heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know a lady who before she started her non-for-profit, she was buying food, using her resources to buy food before she even, you know, started the non-for-profit. So she was taking money out of her own pocket before she did it, you know. I know a lot of ladies who have started non-for-profits that work together with just what they got before they actually branched off into a full-fledged non-for-profit. So it's like that's one of the things. Do you have a team? Or do you know a non-for-profit that could use you to be part of their team?
Mm-hmm.
That's the support aspect of it. You know, if you're like, no, you know, and this is one of the crazy things that I hear sometimes. You know, I tried to do it, but now I'm all here by myself, doing it by myself.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing it by yourself, if you're a one-man non-for-profit, I think you just need to go on and just, you know, do you. You know,
mm-hmm.
or combine with someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like I said, guys, this is in no way being like, you know, like trying to shoot down anybody's idea of it. But you have to look at the full scope of it. You got to look at the timelines. You got to look at the investment, time, money, and energy. You got to look at what you're doing in terms of starting this. And this is not something that's just coming out from, you know, coming from my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that, like, people who are veterans and non-for-profit chairmen of non-for-profit boards have actually said, you know, countless and countless amount of times that you see a lot of, out of these 52,000 non-for-profits that are out there, there's not 52,000 thriving non-for-profits.
Absolutely not.
Because if it is, I'm telling you, you wouldn't be a homeless, hungry,
no.
Homeless, hungry, or anything for that matter. I'm just saying, out here, if 52,000 non-for-profits in the Cook County, in our good Cook County, is thriving, making money, generating. So that's the thing, guys. If you do have a team that supports your purpose,
mm-hmm.
might be a good thing to start a non-for-profit, because now you got people and you got a group, you got a board, because a board, you have to have a board of directors to have a thriving non-for-profit. You can't do it just you. That's not a non-for-profit. Even for you to even establish a non-for-profit, you need three people.
Mm-hmm.
The Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. You need three. To even be identified as a non-for-profit. So, do you got a team? That's key. Another question that you need to ask when we're talking about starting a non-for-profit versus supporting one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have donations, donors, resources to start a non-profit?
Mm-hmm.
That's a major question, guys. Do you have donors?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have people that are currently still sowing seeds into into your mission? You know, do you have resources? Because sometimes you can have a lot of in kind donations. You know, like if you connected with an organization or a sponsor who gives in-kind donations. So now you get in a, you know, a crap load of clothing or food, groceries that are coming from, you know, jewels that, you know, about to expire, but you know, you get, if you have a connection like that, then you know you have resources. I'm not, money is not always a resource, guys, but money answers all things. But it's not it's not the only resource. That's what I'm saying. If you have a lot, like I know an organization who gets a ton of stuff from Bed Bath & Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, before I even start going into that whole process of having a non-for-profit, if someone is giving me tons and tons of stuff from a store or something like that, it is nothing for me to put together a home care bag.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm going from family to family. I'm going to schools and looking at, you know, in parents who are in need and saying, do you need towels? Do you need sheets? Do you need this? Do you need that? If you have the resource, then just start going into the action. You might can start a nonprofit if you got some resources. But if not, can you donate or provide resources to an existing nonprofit?
Right.
Because if you don't have the resources currently and you don't have the money currently, you have to get there. Now, here's the thing. A lot of these questions I'm asking, you know, do you have a team? If you don't have a team as starting a non-for-profit, you got to put together a team.
Mm-hmm.
Is there the need?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't know if it's a need, now starting a non-for-profit, you got to find a need. You know, do you have donors? If you don't have donors, then you got to get donors. And 9 times out of 10, if you're starting a non-for-profit by yourself, you're doing all this by yourself.
Facts.
All this by yourself. You're starting it, so now you're putting money into getting your 501c3, everything. That's almost about $1,000 right there. And it's depending on what consultant you're going to, or somebody to help you start it, you can already came out of $5,000 right there. And then on top of that, now you got to find a need. Then on top of that, you got to get the donors. Then on top of that, you got to find a team. Then on top of that, you got to tell a story. Then you got to do a social media page. Then you got to, and I'm saying that this is the checklist. And if you are a one-man non-for-profit, that is a lot of time and energy.
Yep.
Can I say that it'll never get started? No, I can't say that. But I say that the amount of time that you're trying to make an impact, you'll spend so much time doing the administrative,
mm-hmm.
operational processes that you're going to negate the calls. Because now you're just busy doing a whole bunch of other things.
Mm-hmm.
So that, in other words, and this is how we're going to close out, if you're going to make a difference, if you want to sow a seed, do your research. That's my takeaway.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you have the commitment necessary to start a non-for-profit. If not, you're just a 501c3 on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's nothing that's being birthed. You'll still look at the need. You'll still see the need. But if you have something, like you said, what you got in your hand, if you have something to be able to give, look at what's going on in our community now and make that difference without having to have a name for yourself. You know, sometimes if it's really all about the giving, sometimes it's just doing the deed and seeing that, okay, there's an organization out here in my community right now that is, you know, feeding, you know, 10,000 homeless people a night, or there's an existing non-for-profit right here in my community right now that is training moms how to, you know, advance in their careers, you know, or educating young youth, or, you know, getting kids off the street. There's somebody already in your community doing that. Then what can you bring to the table right now and make an impact,
mm-hmm.
versus 3 or 4 years down the road when your non-for-profit gets there. But shout out to all my non-for-profits out there, the ones that I actually see doing the work, the big ones to the little ones, because you are the ones impacting our community. You are the ones out here, and you're doing the legwork. So, I mean, just much, much blessings to everybody out there, to my Focus Fairies out there, to the Global Girls out there doing amazing things. I've seen the Global Girls in my heart. You know, when you see, it's like you see things like that, right? When I sat there in the concert and I seen the Global Girls, like, dance, and I'm not talking about any type of dance. They're doing ballet. They're doing interpretative dancing and everything. And now these ladies, they're going, like, the younger, they go out to different countries, you know, and make an impact. And they're inner city young women. Those are the things, when I see them acting and doing that, that makes me want to write a check. It don't make me want to start up another nonprofit organization to do what they're doing. It makes me want to write a check to keep whatever they're doing going. And that's the whole thing. Use your resources wisely, guys. Use what you have wisely. Make that impact. Not everybody's called to start a non-for-profit. Some people are just called to be a support to it. I stay in my lane. I don't have a non-for-profit. I consult non-for-profits. I consult small businesses. But I do not have a non-for-profit. Why? Because I came to the understanding that I don't have the time to start a non-for-profit. I don't have the time. I have resources, but I would rather put my resources in people that I know that are doing what they are called to do. Not the shady ones. The ones that are out there, not the ones that buying, the ones that are out there that I see four or five women from young girls from the city going to India. You know, or something that's really teaching our kids in the community how to, you know, program computers.
Yeah.
You know, that's the stuff that does my heart good. I don't know about anybody else, but when I see that, that makes me want to help and put my two cents in it. You know, be a part. Find a way to unify versus always separating. Because I've seen so many separate organizations, and then we're a bunch of separate organizations in the community trying to do a little when we can come together and do a lot. But that's my closeout, guys. I want you guys to be blessed. Have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful weekend until I see you next Thursday. You know, if you guys, if you need any help, because I know organizations out there that will love.
You get what you want to be, you know that you better grind.
Yeah, that's why we just jump the bad guy.